This week, I'm talking about remote connections to Windows systems. Welcome to the Digital Forensics Survival Podcast. This is episode 439. Hello, everyone. I'm Michael, your host. Welcome to the show. This week is about RDP, or Remote Desk Protocol. Often a valuable digital forensics artifact due to its widespread use to remote access systems. Targeting this artifact can reveal information about unauthorized access, insider threats, and lateral movement made by attackers within a network. By examining RDP logs, you as an examiner can trace the attacker's steps, identify compromised accounts, and understand the scope of the breach. For example, RDP forensics can be used to detect brute force attacks on login credentials, track the use of stolen credentials, and monitor for suspicious reconnection attempts to previously established connections. A further breakdown is coming right up. Facing an overflow of evidence drives, image 26 drives at a time with a TOLA Task Force 2. This high-performance hardware imager reassembles unknown RAID arrays, supports damaged drives, and can be integrated into your workflow via API. Learn more at atola.com. Once again, that's A-T-O-L-A.com. Have you been hit by ransomware, suffered a data breach, or have departing employee concerns? Look no further than Samuri Professional Services for all your digital service needs. Their licensed and certified examiners bring decades of experience to bear on your issue. Visit samuri.com/services today to see a list of services or schedule a free consultation with an expert. Have you ever found the smoking gun only to have the suspect claim the device has a hidden backdoor or malware? Now you can check for malware on a disk image right within Autopsy. The new Cyber Triage Malware Scanner module for Autopsy will check all the executables on a disk image against 40-plus malware scanning engines. This saves you from having to mount the drive and risk bringing malware into your lab. Visit cybertriage.com/DFSP to learn more. All right, so this week is about RDP forensics. I'm going to talk a little bit about what it is, its forensic value, and then I'm going to lay out a triage methodology that you can use. And the triage methodology is going to be how to detect RDP usage in different stages of the connection, so that when you find an artifact, which is mainly going to be in our evidence logs, you'll be able to find out, like, is this the beginning of the session, the end of the session? Is there something going wrong with the session? And you'll also know the artifacts that you need in order to have a complete record of the connection. You know, when it started, everything that happened, and then when it ended. So let's start with what is RDP. Of course, it stands for Remote Desktop Protocol, which is a proprietary protocol developed by Microsoft. And you guessed it, it's used to connect to and control computers or virtual machines over a network connection. It provides a graphical user interface for the user, thus the name Remote Desktop. Common use cases are pretty standard. You're using it or you see it used widely for remote administration. So these are your IT admins using RDP to manage servers and troubleshoot issues. Remote work, of course, people connecting into systems from their desktops at home to remote work locations. You also have virtual desktop infrastructure. So organizations use RDP to provide virtual desktops to users. And these desktops are hosted on centralized servers. So think about environments where everything, user endpoints, as well as all the servers, have to remain in bounds. RDP is a solution for that. And then, of course, technical support. And this actually comes up in a lot of scams. But it has a legitimate use where companies will use RDP to connect to a client's computer to help them troubleshoot issues or figure out why their computer isn't working correctly. In terms of its investigative value, RDP has significant value because it leaves behind a trail of logs that can provide valuable insights for your investigation. And within these logs, you can understand or identify unauthorized access. So this would be detecting how and when an attacker actually accessed a system remotely. You could also detect attempts. So within the same attack, you may have some remoting that was successful and some that wasn't. RDP can be one of the artifacts that you're looking at and you need to understand in order to make that or to tell the difference between the two. Understanding the movement of an attacker within a network is also a function of RDP as an artifact, so you can use it to basically trace attack vectors. It can be used to monitor user activity. So if you identify an account that you think is compromised, you may want to start looking at any RDP activity associated with it and maybe do that historically and then start building up sort of a trend revolving around that and then find deviations or see if there are deviations from that trend that may be significant to your investigation. And what this all comes down to is it's a valuable artifact for incident response. You can use it to assist in the reconstruction of events leading up to or following a security breach. As we move on to talk about the triage methodology, let me just go over the key points because there are quite a few event logs involved here. So it may seem like a lot of information, but it really isn't. These are all the pieces of the puzzle that you need to assemble in order to get that complete picture. So first of all, you have two puzzles. You have the server side, and then you have the client side. Now, fortunately, there's just going to be one log, or one event, I should say, on the client side that I'm going to recommend. Everything else is on the server side, which is typically when you're doing an IR investigation, you're starting with the server. And if you find some anomalous RDP activity, you want to know, well, where are the other pieces of the puzzle so I can understand what's going on and then use that information to, first of all, identify the endpoint. And then if you actually can get a hold of that endpoint and you need to corroborate the information, you'll know what to do because that final piece of the puzzle, that final event log will be provided to you here. What I'm going to be walking through is the connection the steps of a connection. So what happens, what artifacts are recording the different steps so that you know where to go and what information is in each of them. Now, there are different event codes. They're mainly in two different logs. You're going to have an operational log, an EVTX log, and then the security log. And I think the system log is in there for one record. So, but basically, it's just your security log and your operations log. In many environments, you don't have the operation log being fed into your SIEM. So that's something you may have to go to the host for. So this methodology has additional value because you could use the security and the system event logs to maybe do that first pass and identify things of interest. And if you find it, then that's your justification to make the effort to collect the operational logs to bring greater context into what you have already found. All right, what does this all mean? Well, let me just break down the sequence so you understand from a high level what I will be talking about, and then we'll get into more granular detail. So we basically have the network connection initiation. So that's going to start. There's going to be an authentication success or failure process. There are different records that will record that, so that's the next step. Then there is going to be the session logon and shell start. So just because you have the ability to log on doesn't mean you're actually logging on. Knowing the sequence is going to help you differentiate what is actual evidence of logon versus attempted logon, which could save you a lot of time, especially if you're looking at something, knowing the difference may be the difference between, you know, a SEV 3 or 4 event and a SEV 1 event. And then, of course, the session is going to disconnect or reconnect. We all have, you know, wonderful internet that that happens from time to time. Knowing the logs that are going to capture that information may be important to your investigation. And then at some point, the session is going to end, and you may want to know how the termination is executed. So this could be the user is actually doing it, but maybe the user got kicked off for some reason, and that's important for your investigation. So that's the logical sequence we're going to follow. So and that's what I recommend that you do during your investigation. Be aware of all of these event codes that I'll be presenting. Just keep in mind that when you find one, be cognizant of where you are in the sequence. You know, make sure that you look forwards and backwards to collect, again, the rest of the pieces of that puzzle, because they're all important to understand what's going on with this particular session. All right, so it all begins with the establishing of a network connection. And you'll find that recorded in the operational log under event 1149. Now, what I say to the operational log, this is a Windows event log that's in the System32 directory. So if you go to a system root, you'll see System32 directory. Drill down to WinEVT directory, the logs subdirectory, and then within that logs subdirectory, you'll see a very long file name. The full name is Microsoft Windows Terminal Services Remote Connection Manager Operational.evtx. Most people just refer to it as the Remote Connection Operational Logs. There are different types of operational logs in there, so you may see many. Make sure you get the right one. All right, so this log, the operational log, logs the successful creation of a network connection from the user's RDP client to the target server. Now, one big thing here I want you to keep in mind, this does not yet confirm successful user authentication. It only indicates that the target machine has responded and displayed a login window for credential entry, and that's it. So even though it says, you know, right in the event log, user authentication succeeded, there has been no success of authentication, just the ability to authenticate at this point in time. That leads us to the next set of logs, which are in the security EVTX logs. This is event 4624 and 4625. 4624 is an account was successfully logged on. Now, I've covered this before. This comes up a lot in Windows Forensics. Event 4624 marks a successful logon, and it'll have logon types, which will show the specific type of logon that it's referring to. So you have network logons, you have standard logons, and then you have four different logon types that are related to remote desktop services. You have logon type 10 and 3, and this indicates the use of remote desktop services to create a new session. You have logon type 7, which reflects a reconnection to an existing RDP session. And then you have logon type 5, which points to an RDP connection to a server console, or think of it as admin mode. 4625, of course, is the sister event of 4624, an account failed to log on. And this can be equally as critical. 4625 logs unsuccessful logon attempts, and these are valuable for detecting brute force attacks or attempts using compromised credentials. Now, with a failed logon, you have a status and a substatus code, which provides insight into the nature of the failures. So this is going to be useful in distinguishing the difference between legitimate issues, such as maybe an expired password, that happens a lot, and your more malicious activities or your more malicious tones. So something like a repetitive failed logon with a type of username does not exist may indicate some brute force attacks where the attacker is just cycling through usernames and passwords and trying to get lucky. All right, now we have the session log on as it's recorded in the operational log. So upon successful authentication, in the operational log, you get event ID 21. This confirms that the Explorer shell has started, which means that the Windows desktop appears in the user's RDP session. A source network address not equal to local confirms a remote RDP logon when you're actually looking at the logs. So again, an element within event ID 21 is going to be source network address. If you see local, that's not an RDP logon. If you actually see a source address that's not local, and this typically is an IP address, that means a successful remote logon has happened. That means someone somewhere is looking at an actual remote desktop. You also have event ID 22, which is shell start notification received. Again, this is also in the operational log. This event indicates a successful RDP logon and shell start, and this reaffirms that the session has begun. Once connected, if your internet is like mine, you're going to get connections and reconnections intermittently. So, of course, we know sessions connect and disconnect all the time for various reasons. We have four different event IDs in the operational log that you want to make note of. We have event ID 24, which is a session has been disconnected. 25, a session reconnection has succeeded. 39, disconnected by another user or admin. And then 40, disconnection with a reason code. Now, the reason codes, if you see this, you can look that up in the Microsoft documentation. The one I want to talk about is event ID 39, which is a disconnect by another user or admin. Many times, an RDP is set up on the server side to only allow so many simultaneous connections. And this is for resources. If you have, 100 people potentially that can log in, you don't want them all doing that at once. So it's typical to see a logon cap of like two or five users at a time. Now, what may happen, you may have the ability as a user when you log in to get a screen that says, okay, you've successfully logged in. However, we can't present that screen to you because there's too many users. Do you want to kick someone out? Right? Do you want to disconnect another user and then you can pick the user you want to disconnect? Or an admin can just kick someone out as well. So this could play a number of different ways. You could have an attacker that is kicking someone out. So you could have a legitimate user being impacted by, say, a compromised account. Or you may have an admin, or there may be a security alert where someone notices, hey, what's going on here? And then someone goes in like an admin and kicks that person out. And so the exact date and time that happened is something that you could look at the logs and actually find and then connect that back to the session activity that preceded it. So again, all of this in the operational logs. The next two events deal with reconnection and disconnection, but as recorded in the security EVTX logs. Event 4778 is when a session was reconnected. So when a user reconnects to an existing RDP session, 4778 logs this as an event. So it's typically paired. If you have both sets of logs, this will typically pair in date and time with event ID 25. It's going to include details such as the session name, the client address, and the logon ID to help you identify the source of the activity. 4779 is going to log when a user disconnects from an RDP session. And then lastly, like all good things, we have sessions ending, and we have a number of events that will log a session log off. In the operational log, you have event 23. So session log off succeeded. And this marks the end of a user session, indicating a formal log off. In the security event log, you have event 4634. An account was logged off. And just like the name says, when a user disconnects or logs off from an RDP session, this log is recorded. You also get an entry in the system log, so system.evtx, and that's event 9009. And this is when the desktop window manager has exited with code, and then it'll give you a code. Typically associated with a formal closing of the RDP connection, it's going to indicate a shutdown of the RDP desktop GUI. That's everything on the server side. On the client side, as promised, it's much simpler. It's just event ID 1102. This event occurs on the client side when the user connects to a remote desktop RDS host. That's going to be for Windows 10 and 11. One thing I want to point out here is that in many environments, there are so many different logs and your SIEM can only just hold so much. Your standard logs are your system and your security logs. The log examples I've given here for RDP forensics or log analysis give you plenty of information to start scoping for anomalous RDP activity. The typical course of action or flow is that you hit those security logs first. If you find anything, then you make the extra effort to get those operational logs, and those operational logs enrich the data that you have already found and give additional context to your RDP findings. Now, I could be wrong. Perhaps you're one of the lucky ones and you have all sorts of operational logs being fed into your SIEM, so you get this all at once. Just something to consider. I typically would look at what I have to work with and make my initial methodology based on that, and then sort of have a second methodology to feed in the rest of that, just to make the flow a bit easier. And then, of course, if you're sharing the information among team members, less is more typically when you're responding or you're investigating. But the choice is yours. Overall, by tracking these event IDs, no matter how you do it, you as an investigator can piece together the timeline and details of RDP sessions. And as I said in the beginning, it's very useful in detecting unauthorized access attempts and understanding user activity, be it a compromised user or legitimate activity. This is by no means a comprehensive approach. I would consider this a level one triage, but it's verbose enough to allow for the identification and mitigation of security threats involving RDP. So I hope you found this information useful. And as always, don't forget to check out the SDF training series. This is online on-demand computer forensic training, and it's aimed at teaching you a valuable skill in about an hour or two. Find all of the classes at the website securityttx.com/SDF. And with that, it looks like it's time to end yet another episode. As always, thanks for listening.